Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America Prospect Handbook Podcast. J.J. Cooper, Matt Eddy here as we've been all through the six divisions. Wrapping up today with the AL West, doing our AL West Prospects Draft. Before we do that, we do want to remind you that the Baseball America books, some of them are in hand, some of them are shipping, and some of them will be shipping pretty soon. Matt is actually taking a break from finishing editing the Super Register to join us on the podcast here. We have sent the directory to the printer, so we'll be getting it's still a little ways away, but the directory will be coming out for all too long. Prospect handbooks should be shipping next week, so if you haven't gotten your prospect handbook yet, it's a very good time to order. Go to baseballamerica.com/store, or you can give us a call at 1-800-845-2726. And you can place your order over the phone. Reminder, if you do order the Baseball America Prospect Handbook from us here at Baseball America directly, you get the 31st prospect for each team as well in a special supplement. And also, you will get it way before anyone else will, because they ship from Baseball America well before they ship from anywhere else. So that's a reminder of that. And that leads us into the final, I'm kind of sad to say this, the final of our six division prospect drafts. To remind you, if you have not heard the previous five, and if you haven't, they're all there. Remind you that, okay, the rules of this are we don't draft number one prospects. Number one prospects are off the board. Usually number one prospects would be gone, you know, very quickly anyway. I think there are a couple guys here who may have lasted a little while, you know, if we did that. But number ones are off the board. And we will keep going back and forth until we've at least selected a player from every team. So every team, you know, in the AL West will be represented. Matt, I think you went first last time, if I remember correctly.
He took Sano at the top of the AL Central draft.
So he took Sano at the top of the AL Central. That leads back to me.
I think the best part about this is us flipping through the magazine live on the air.
You can hear
our extensive preparatory.
We can wing this off our head. Well, it's pretty easy for me, number one pick. I'm going with the power speed combo that is George Springer. There's some risk there, more than some of the other first picks. I think Miguel Sano is probably a little safer first pick, a little younger. You know, he had a little bit more of a track record of hitting for Sano. That being said, Springer, and we've talked about, me and you have talked about in the office, Springer's a guy who, he's got the combination of power, speed, defense, all together is going to give him a whole lot of opportunities to prove that he can hit, because the rest of his package, what he does, is so valuable that he doesn't have to hit 300 to be a very productive player. Now, really the question comes down to, where does he fall on that line? Kind of a worst-case scenario we've talked about, I mean, worse than maybe, but a realistic bad scenario for him would be kind of a Chris Young-type career where the strikeouts end up overwhelming everything else. Even though Chris Young did have some highs to his career, but he's really ended up being a little bit more of a bounce around guy than maybe, you know, one would have hoped.
Yeah.
And then at the upside, if he just cuts down the strikeouts a little bit, then you're talking about a guy who could be a solid all-star, because again, he may not play center right off the bat. We don't know whether he's going to play center, whether Dexter Fowler's going to play center, but it's not hard at all to see with that team, he's going to get, the Astros are going to give him, you know, here's 550 at-bats this year, here's 550 at-bats next year, here's 550 at-bats the year after that, to see if he can just make the couple of adjustments. Right now, from what I'm talking to scouts, he's a little bit pull-happy. You know, it worked for him pretty well last year. It's hard to argue it too much because he was looking for something on the inside half to pull, and when he got it, he hit 37 homers last year. But scouts do think that he's going to have to cover the whole plate a little bit better when he gets to the big league level. That's the adjustment. Some feel like he'll make that adjustment no problem. Others feel like that's going to be a little bit of an issue for him. That'll be a fun thing to watch.
The key for any player, any hitter like Springer, is just making the most of all your balls in play. You know, hitting as many extra base hits as possible when you do make contact, because it's not going to be frequent contact.
Exactly. So that puts it back to you.
Well, there's no reason not to stay with the Astros. I'm just going to take Mark Appel, the Astros' number three prospect and the first pick in last year's draft. You know, he's got prototype front of the rotation stuff, maybe two starter stuff, fastball, breaking ball, size, track record. There's not really many red flags with him.
No, history of durability. You know, it's
he's maybe not as exciting as some other picks taking this high in the draft, but I think the overall package is sound
and should be productive at the big league level for your fictional team, they'll never play a game before long.
Right away. Who has the most 1-1 picks on the roster?
Huh.
I bet most of them are number one prospects.
One of them is not available. Carlos Correa, not available in this draft because he's a number one. So it's interesting. We'll have to go back and look. We have to actually put these together. I have this plan to put together a post for next week of just what our teams
are. I've got them all written down up to now.
Oh, sweet. So that's back to me, and now it actually does get a little bit more interesting. It comes down to three teams. I feel like I put it this way. We're not going to be picking an Angel for a while. I don't think we're going to be picking an A for a little while either.
I don't think so either.
So it really comes down to Mike Foltynewicz versus DJ Peterson versus Jorge Alfaro.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go. It sounds funny to say this with a pitcher, but I'm going to go with the safest guy here. I think Mike Foltynewicz is the safest of those three picks because...
Staying with the Astros.
You're talking about a guy who already has double-A experience, who has one of the best fastballs in the game. I know it can straighten out a little bit at times, but he also did show at times that it had a little bit more life than others. It really kind of depends on how he's throwing it. And really, a guy who... You look at the year he had. Yeah, he had more walks than you wanted to see at the double-A level, but he's really made some impressive strides because... The one of the things that jumps out is just when he was drafted, his fastballs jumped not just a grade. You could argue it maybe has jumped two grades since he was drafted.
He was an upper Midwest,
right?
Illinois kid.
And it's really now he's one of the hardest throwers in baseball. I don't gonna say worst case scenario because worst case scenario for a pitcher always is that he gets hurt and loses his stuff. But he seems safe that kind of the low floor for him, the floor for him is if healthy, is useful reliever. I think he's got a much better chance to start than that. Big frame, should be able to soak up, you know, innings. And again, on a team that is going to have every reason in the world before too long to give him a starting job and let him hold it for a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my second pick. I'm going to deviate slightly from the rankings and take James Paxton of the Mariners, number three.
I like that pick among, for you because I want to. I like what it's going to do for me.
I like among rookie left-handers last year, Paxton threw the hardest. He had arguably the best breaking ball, major league rookies. And I think the control will continue to be an issue. But if you look historically at the best pitchers with poor control, most of them are left-handers. Whatever the reason is, so I'm seeing Paxton as kind of like a with the ceiling of a Jonathan Sanchez type pitcher, but with better stuff.
Okay. I see that's an interesting. I like that
much.
Like that comp.
Much bigger and throws much harder.
I like that comp. I'm going to go with DJ Peterson then. I'll take the probably the best bat available, you know, in this group. You're talking about in Peterson. He was really considered one of the two or three best college bats in last year's class. Mm-hmm. Really, the big knocks on him come down to, I know he's listed as a third baseman right now. The next guy that you bring up to me who says that he thinks he's going to stick at third base will probably be the first. he's going to be a first baseman, you know, long term. It's almost assuredly. But he is, I think, going to hit enough to do that. I'll take that bat.
Okay. It doesn't fill a area of need on my team, my fake team here, I think. But I'll take Rangers number two, Jorge Alfaro. The super athletic catcher, you know, with a background as a third baseman. Power is legit. Arm is legit. Everything else, up in the air.
Can he hit?
But
and can he receive? I mean, those two things are the question. He can actually run. The run's not even the question. He's the catcher, so it's going to slow down. But if you lined up every minor league catcher in baseball and said, have a foot race, I think I would put my money on Jorge Alfaro to win.
But he does the things that major league teams seem to prioritize, and that's throw really well and hit the ball really far.
And you do wonder with receiving, like you would expect that it's going to continue to get better. We did see too many pass balls last year.
Mm-hmm.
Too many times where you watch him and it's like, good receiving. Did he forget that they were throwing a pitch? I mean, like, you know, I don't know if it's concentration lapses or just mechanical problems or what, but you still see some of that. He still is a young catcher who, again, can, you know, had played a couple of other positions, and you are talking about a guy who last year was the most he's ever caught because he's had some injury problems as well.
Yeah,
but
that's an important note, yeah.
You know, but you add it all up and you say, hey, if it all comes together, he could be really something pretty special.
And his swing and miss issues are not quite as acute as his teammates.
No, we'll be getting to some of those, I'm sure, in a little while. Back to me. Yeah. I'm going to go back to the Astros. Lance McCullers Jr. Again, I just talked about Mike Fultonewicz. Mm-hmm. McCullers is you hear people say, oh, he's going to end up as a reliever because he's a fastball. And it's when I say curveball almost doesn't do it justice because it's such a power curveball. But he's a fastball curveball guy. I do think that he's one of those guys who, even if his changeup, and I saw him in person, and it was pretty brutal changeup. I mean, like, my notes were, the first several of them were, is that a changeup? They were that bad. I know it got a little better as the season went along. Talking to people who are much better at this than I am, they said, no, we saw flashes every now and then of at least an average changeup. That being said, I think he's a guy who his first two pitches are good enough that he might be able to start without really with even just the makings of a decent changeup. He has to improve it, but he's going to be primarily a two-pitch guy. His two pitches, I think, maybe still good enough to get, you know, both right-handers and left-handers out, even without that changeup. I'll take the power arm who, at his best, is really dominant.
Okay. I'm going to stay with the Rangers and take Michael Choice, their number three prospect. I think you're looking at a guy, a top 10 overall pick in the 2010 draft, who's improved his plate approach every year. The raw power is plus. Last year he hit 300 in AAA and had, I believe he had 10 home runs on the road and only 4 at home. Really hampered by his home park last year. I think that home run outcome will change dramatically this year. Just hitting fly balls in Round Rock or in Arlington is going to make a big difference to his bottom line. And I think the power plays on a quarter.
Okay. I'm going to be a little strategic here. I have a couple guys I like. I'm going to take Vince Velasquez. I'm going to stay on the Astros. I know I did the Astros list, but I really, there's a lot of these Astros guys who I really believe in some. Velasquez, I've taken Fultonewicz, McCullers, and Velasquez.
Yep.
Velasquez is probably the most slam dunk starter type of these three. Like, he has to improve. His changeup's already there. He needs to improve his breaking ball. Fastball, breaking ball. Fastball changeup right now are really good. The breaking ball needs some work. Had some injury issues. Really bounced back last year. Kind of proved he was healthy. And, again, like McCullers, you know, both of them are going to be pitching probably in a pretty brutal park to pitch in this year. McCullers, Velasquez got a taste of Lancaster last year. But, again, a guy who 2-3 years down the road could be a solid middle of the rotation starter.
Yeah, maybe the temperatures don't get high enough in April for it to be a big factor in Lancaster, you know? Because I know that at night there it does get cold, and then maybe the temperatures aren't quite as bad. All right. Now I'm going to go back to the Astros. I'm taking Jonathan Singleton.
Okay.
First baseman. It's kind of similar in some ways to Choice in that his superficial production doesn't look that great from 2013, but he's got plus power on contact and a good batting eye. And,
yeah, draws always drawn walks.
Just enough defensive chops to get it done at first base. I think you're looking at 7 power if you want to be optimistic, with a chance to be a 50-55 hitter.
And again, talking about teams, one thing for these Astros prospects is they need these guys to come through, but there's also opportunity there. We saw them, again, they're going to get a little bit better, but we saw them give Chris Carter 550 at-bats last year, 500 at-bats to figure things out. Jonathan Singleton, before long, is going to have some job security. He's going to get a chance. It's not going to be something where if he struggles for the first 100 at-bats, it's going to be something where he gets sent back down. He's going to get some time to adjust to the big league level in a way that maybe a team that's a little closer to the playoffs doesn't give a rookie that opportunity as well. But that's back to me. This is while I was being strategic. I'm going to go back to
exercising some strategery.
I'm going to go back to the Rangers, and I am going to skip over number 4 prospect Nick Williams. And if nothing else, my BP sessions will be I'll be able to charge admission to them because I'm drafting Joey Gallo.
Mm-hmm.
The when I say power hitting third baseman, that really doesn't do it justice. As much power as anyone in the game, his BP sessions are. I've gotten to see him a couple times, and they're absolutely fascinating. I do hope that he makes it to the Futures game this year because he didn't make it last year because of an injury. And watching him hit BP in a big league ballpark would be very fun to do. I mean, he could immediately kind of jump into the home run derby, and I would actually, if he was in the home run derby, I'd put him out of a decent chance of winning it against the big leaguers. That's all the good things. Is he going to be able to stick at third? Okay, there's a lot of questions there. More importantly, is he going to make enough contact? Because he hit 40 home runs. He hit 40 home runs in 125 or so games last year. He missed time last year. He also struck out 172 times in just over 400 at-bats. That's a strikeout rate that is going to concern pretty much anyone. The shocking thing is that he managed to hit 245, because considering his strikeout rate, it really, you know, if you told me he hit 200, it wouldn't have been shocking. He did get on base some, because really, to be honest, pitchers are afraid of him, especially at lower levels. They're already having struggling to throw strikes. You put a guy like Gallo in the, you know, in there, and they're trying to be a little bit more fine. You're going to see a lot of, you know, a lot of pitches to look at. But again, there's concerns there. I always come back to it. I watch Russ Branyan play in the South Atlantic League. Branyan's a guy who, you know, I know there's a lot of people around who don't even remember watching him play, but the reality is that Branyan was a guy who you could look at him and say, man, that guy was disappointing how he ended up, or you could look at it and say, you know, that guy was more productive than maybe people realize. I think Branyan may have been a little bit better at third base, a little bit more athletic, but at third. But I do see that as a pretty likely, and again, the ceiling for Gallo is that he's the best player in baseball if he cuts down. I mean, he could be that Chris Davis type slugger. Again, that's his ceiling. He's got a long ways to go to get there.
Yeah. My favorite stat about Gallo, who I was looking at with my next pick, is,
that's why I was like, I gotta get him now.
But yeah, I'll let you sit at him for 3 years. I'll see nothing in the big leagues next year.
Exactly.
my favorite stat on Gallo is Hickory plays in such a hitter's park, but that had no factor in Joey Gallo's home run total. He hit 22 on the road, led the South Atlantic League.
Watching BP, I got to see him in BP in spring training, and then watching him in BP in Greensboro for several days. It was kind of we made a point of making sure that we were always there for BP for the Hickory Club. And I do think that Gallo's BP swing right now may be smoother than his in-game swing. Like, and it goes, I mean, which is also a reminder that he doesn't need to swing nearly, you know, he doesn't have to swing that hard. Even his, like, early, his first couple of rounds of BP where he's really working on trying to, you know, hit the ball to all fields and all that, he's still driving the ball monstrous distances because he's that strong, but it's a little bit more controlled. And then he gets in games and it feels like it's like he's watching a guy trying to hit the ball 550 feet, which, again, he can miss the ball a little bit and it's going to the wall. It's immense power. But back to you.
All right. Whatever pick this is, it's going to be Domingo Santana, Astros number 8. The strong arm, bright fielder with profile power for the corner. He's got some issues to clear up, like a lot of these young power hitters who play the outfield corner in terms of making more contact. But
he's going to be able to play right. That's a useful help for a guy like that.
I feel like too many guys, you know, fanned out to the corners, but that's just the way the talent breaks down.
So, yeah, you're probably wise to take him because I very well may have gone that direction myself. Now it gets interesting. I'm going to go back to the Rangers. I'm going to go Nick Williams. I at one point I asked a scout and I think a manager. I said, you know, it feels like that Nick Williams has the more advanced approach of this group of Hickory, you know, massive tooled up hitters. And I had both of them described to me. It's like, I don't know if he has a better approach. I think his approach is pretty raw, but his hands work so well that he can be fooled and still make solid contact in ways a lot of these other guys can't. Again, Hickory's a good park, as you pointed out. 293, 337, 543 is pretty loud for a guy, especially who is considered pretty raw. That's him with some steps forward, you know, needed to be taken. He needs to walk more, as pretty much all these Hickory guys do.
Yeah, he had like the 10th worst in the minors, walk to strikeout ratio.
Right. He's got to get better. Again, I want to see these guys, these Hickory hitters. We've talked about this, I think, on the podcast even. They really didn't work on approach last year. It was learn your swing. I want to see these guys, you know, personally, again, take or leave this because it's just my opinion. I want to see these guys work on approach. I want to see, okay, let's see something different when it's a 0-2 count versus a 2-0. And that's what we haven't really seen a whole lot of yet, to me at least. I'll be interested to see that with these guys, like if they can emphasize having that approach, because I think a guy like Williams can walk more and cut down the strikeout some if he really focuses on being short to the ball in two strike counts. Back to you.
Yeah, I thought about Williams there. I'm going to stay with the Rangers and take Luis Sardinas, number 7, the shortstop.
Shortstop.
I don't have any shortstops on my team, and this is probably the purest defender I have a chance to get with the remaining few picks of the draft. Switch hitter, can run, throw. Will he be able to hit at a major league level? That remains to be determined, but I feel pretty confident that he can based on his contact skills. He almost reminds me a little bit of a poor man's Eric Ibar. You know, switch hitting, contact-oriented, good fielding shortstop. Sardinas is not quite as explosive, and he's not quite as thick, so I don't know how much authority he's going to hit with, but I think that's the type of player you're looking at, if it all goes well.
Okay. Back to me. I'm going another Astro. We got a couple of young power arms that are available on the board. Luis Gohara, the Mariners guy, for one, but I'm going to go Michael Feliz. Mm-hmm. Interesting backstory for him. Was a signed by the A's, was voided. The contract was voided because he tested positive for steroids. Mm-hmm. That ends up working out well for the Astros because they get him. And really, I know no other way to put it, but dominated the New York Penn League as a pretty young guy to dominate the New York Penn League. Very athletic delivery. The Astros emphasize athletic deliveries. Gets a massive amount of extension to with his lower half in his delivery. You know, you're talking about a plus fastball that should even continue to get better. Just there's really a lot of tools there. It's a long ways away, but again, they're not gonna. He's a guy who, you know, he has to low A this year. Be very interesting to watch what he does. I'm gonna be very excited to watch him, you know, hopefully pitch multiple times, at least on MILB TV this year, because he's a very interesting guy to watch.
Yeah.
Back to you.
I like Phillies. All right, I'm going to take the Angel that will end this draft. I'm going to take number 2, CJ Krohn, first base / DH.
mean more DH than first base.
You know, when you talk about best power available, I think it's Gallo and then a gap and then Krohn. I mean, among players in this division.
Singleton would be in that discussion.
Santana
would be in that discussion. Alfaro would be in that discussion. But no, I think Krohn's right
there. In terms of usable, it's probably Krohn. Yeah. Really tough park in Arkansas.
Brutal park to hit home runs.
And he didn't show any disparity between home and road. You know, it's kind of a Mark Trumbo type skill set because he doesn't walk. You know, he doesn't make excessive contact. You might get 30 home runs, but you're not going to get much of an on base.
The thing I'm concerned about with him a little bit is that I agree with kind of the Trumbo package. The difference being, though, that Trumbo, one of the things that works really well for Trumbo is I think Trumbo has significantly more athleticism than him. I know they're both big guys.
I know.
But Trumbo is that former third baseman who ends up can play a corner in the outfield and first base. Whereas Krohn used to be a catcher, but shoulder problems, really can't throw anymore.
Yep.
And so not really even much of a first baseman, really more of a DH, which always has to concern you a little bit when you're talking about a guy who's 24.
Yep.
That being said, it's
I just say I'm excited about the
pick. That being said, it really is a guy, though, that it's going to be all come down to whether he hits.
Yeah.
If he hits enough, you live with that.
Overall, he's not going to be as valuable as Trumbo. In the batter's box, he might be similar.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's – well, that does – you. I had the first pick, so I don't get another pick.
Who else were you looking at?
Oh, it would have been a while for Krohn for me. I would have taken Gohara before him. I would have taken Asher Wojciechowski before him. And I probably would have taken Billy McKinney before him. I think that McKinney has a chance to be a similar type hitter, but with some more athleticism. Then probably – that's probably when Krohn would have come in for me. You know, at that point, we'd have been done with. We would have been done with the Astros at that point. We didn't get through all 10. I didn't get a chance to take Asher Woj. You know, I would have left Danny Holson for you though. It's kind of sad to see like number 10 on the Mariners list would have not have been sitting there at this time last year. But shoulder surgeries always are.
Unfortunately, I think I took him last year when John and I did the same exercise with this division.
Well,
thanks for coming out, Danny.
And he's like, wait, so now I'm not on your fake team, but I was on your fake team. Did you put me on, you know, waivers, DFA me, or what? So, do want to interject. We made a mistake here. We're so focused on making sure we took an angel. We haven't taken an A yet. So, a little addendum to this. I did check with Matt, and so we do have two more picks to go. I would take Billy McKinney, the A's outfielder, the number two prospect on the A's list, with my next pick. So, McKinney is a very solid hitter. I do think, you know, in another organization he would rank a little lower. I feel like the A's have a good bit of depth, but it's solid depth. They had a pretty intriguing low-class A team in Beloit, but you look at guys like Renato Nunez and Dylan Covey and Nolan Sandberg and Daniel Robertson. Those guys are interesting, but they're also not yet premium prospects. I got a lot of guys like that. Not a whole lot of guys after you get past number one pick, Addison Russell, who are guys who are pretty safe impact guys yet. A lot more guys who are a little further away. So I would take McKinney. And then checking with Matt, Matt said that he would go in the direction of I'm trying to remember. I think it was Alex Gonzalez, the Rangers right-hander, the number six prospect in the Rangers list. So that would wrap up our picks. We did want to make sure that we picked someone from every team. So sorry, A's fans, we did get that in, and thanks again. Well, we hope that you've enjoyed this. We've gotten some good response that people do. So, you know, we'll try to do this again every year. I think it is a useful way to kind of just look at it and sit down and kind of show you also. We do our list, our collaborative list, but at the same time, we do let the person who's doing the bulk of the reporting kind of lead the way on that. And so we don't always agree with every, you know, we're taking guys a little bit out of order sometimes. And also that's often a useful reminder that these lists are pretty bunched up. Don't get all upset because a guy's seven and another guy's five when we may be saying that, well, the five and seven are a razor, you know, thin difference between the two. But again, we hope you enjoy this. We'll be back next week with a Prospect Handbook podcast. I know this is the Prospect Handbook podcast. We're going to have a Prospect Handbook focused show is what I should say, because we'll be shipping them out next week. So we want to talk a little bit about that and a little bit more about what all you can find in the book, some of the interesting things that you may know or may not know about the book. So for Matt Eddy, JJ Cooper, thanks for the download, and we'll see you next week.